It's your Tuesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Be safe out there today, you guys. A little warning at the front of the show. Looks like it's pretty nasty out there right now. I know most of the snow already fell, but we got some fresh stuff this morning. It's right around freezing temperatures, so drive carefully, plan accordingly, all that good stuff. Today's show, really good one, by the way. Stay inside. Just listen to Daily Delivery. Catch up on back episodes if you've missed some. No crime in that. You are certainly welcome to do that. Randy Johnson joins me here in just a little bit to talk mostly Gophers and college hockey. Gophers start play in the regional just 2 days from now. They are being sent to Sioux Falls. They will face Nebraska-Omaha in the opening round. If they get past that, they will likely face Boston University for the right to go to the Frozen Four, which is, of course, in St. Paul this year. So Randy and I will break that all down. Also, an interesting story about the regional in Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis, where North Dakota, Michigan, Michigan State, and Western Michigan were all sent. A lot of high attendance teams in a small arena that seats a little over 3,000, it says, for this event. Teams, you know, North Dakota, one of the best attendance in the league or in college hockey, over 11,000 people. Tickets for that game are off the charts on the secondary market. We'll talk about that with Randy a little bit, and I'll expand on that a little bit as well. Randy and I'll talk Gopher football. That's his primary beat, of course. Spring practice going on right now for the Gophers. Max Brosmer has kind of caught my eye. Guy that, you know, the new quarterback for the Gophers, transferred in from New Hampshire, wanted to pick Randy's brain on that. So we will talk that in a little bit as well. Got some Shohei Ohtani thoughts at the end of the show, some women's basketball thoughts as well. First, though, what I miss, really interesting story today and on StarTribune.com. Ben Gessling down in Orlando for the NFL owners meetings, caught up with Kevin O'Connell down there as well as other members of the Vikings brain trust. But really, O'Connell is the big one right now as the Vikings consider taking a quarterback, almost certainly do, will need to trade up in this draft. And he's talking about what that process is like, what they will do to try to ensure that they have done all of their homework on this quarterback. So I thought it was interesting. Ben laid out not only like what the Vikings process will be like through this search, through this kind of vetting period of time, but also kind of key stakeholders in this. One thing that was very interesting to me is that Justin Jefferson, wide receiver for the Vikings, will be a key stakeholder in this. He will be in the loop on the quarterback changes, all that good stuff. If we were kind of wondering, like, how did Justin Jefferson feel about the Vikings' decision to move on from Kirk Cousins? He's been a Kirk Cousins advocate. He's talked about how he loves catching the ball from Kirk Cousins. They have a good relationship. Made it clear last year that his preference was to have Cousins be the quarterback. That, of course, didn't happen. Cousins signed with the Falcons this offseason. Massive contract, guaranteed money. Vikings weren't likely to match that anyway, and I think they were ready to move on. So how are they going to thread the needle between what Jefferson wants and what's best for the organization? Well, it sounds like the way they're going to do it mostly is to make sure he's involved in the process, make sure that he is a part of this, and kind of not that he's going to have final say, but make sure that he's comfortable with whatever decision they're making and having the transparency to see how this is playing out. Kevin O'Connell said he, quote, feels very strongly about keeping Jefferson informed. Just reading from one of Ben's stories from the owners meeting. And then this quote from O'Connell: I've talked with him several times, just check-ins here and there. When they've played together, they've done a lot of really special things, talking about Cousins and Jefferson. That's not lost on me, and that's not lost on Jefferson. I feel very strongly about keeping him informed. He's been in the loop. He's been aware. He's allowed to articulate things to me, and that's really been through this whole process. Now, we haven't heard from Jefferson yet about all this, about the quarterback change, but this is kind of the next best thing, right? This is at least knowing what the Vikings are trying to do to make sure he's in the loop, to make sure he's comfortable with all this. And it sounds like it's quite a process. Obviously, there's pro days. You can see these guys throw. There's tons of tape. But O'Connell really seems to want to get to know these quarterbacks they might be taking on a more personal level, whether it's Jaden Daniels, who they might have to move up to two or three for. Drake May, same thing. J.J. McCarthy, who could be available all the way at 11, maybe, but you probably don't want to wait that long. A lot of mock drafts showing the Vikings trading up to 5 to take J.J. McCarthy. Whoever it is, they want to know not just the type of player they're getting, which they do, obviously, with, you know, running him through private workouts, making, you know, running him through their system, putting him through scenarios where they can kind of act in real time, react in real time to things the Vikings do, correct mistakes in real time, see how they process, which is so important for a quarterback. But they also want to know what these guys are like off the field. They take them to lunch, wherever they are, probably on campus, at their school. O'Connell said, I want to see how they interact with folks, because building changing quarterbacks, they don't just change the facilities. Any room they ever walk into, they light it up. They change it, they impact it, and I think you can see that on display in an authentic way when you do the full process with those trips. So that'll lay this out. The Vikings are about a month away from picking. Draft is 1 month from yesterday, April 25th, first round of the draft this year. Busy month in between there, getting to know these quarterbacks even more, deciding, you know, who they really prefer, and then trying to figure out how far they can move up, what the cost is relative to what quarterback they really want. It's going to be a fascinating process. I'm sure some of it's going to happen behind the scenes. I'm sure we'll know some of it going forward, but just a fascinating process that will play out over the next month. I'll have Ben on a show later this week to talk more about what he learned from the owners' meetings, what he learned from talking to all these Vikings decision makers, what he thinks about this process as it plays out.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's talk college hockey right now with Randy Johnson from the Star Tribune. Big time of year for you, Randy. Not only are you in the middle of spring football practice with the Gophers, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as well, but the NCAA field is out. The field of 16 was announced Sunday. Gophers headed to Sioux Falls, an interesting regional. I want to get your take, Randy, on, you know, the 16-team bracket in general. You did a lot of predicting, so none of it seemed necessarily, you know, out of extraordinary, anything like that. But now that we know, you know, what do you think of the draw that the Gophers got, and just the field and how it all sorted out in general?
Yeah, it's a exciting time of year. I'm pretty pumped for the regionals get here, and I'm personally excited too. I get to go back to the motherland.
Yes,
grew up in South Dakota, not in Sioux Falls, but a smaller town. But get to go back there and hopefully catch up with some friends while I'm out there. But yeah, see some good hockey. This is the second time they've had a regional. They were out there in 2018 when you had three Minnesota teams in there, Minnesota Duluth, St. Cloud State, and Minnesota State Mankato. And UMD came out of it, won that regional, and went to the Frozen Four in St. Paul and won that one.
Fewer Minnesota teams this year in the tournament.
Just one, yeah. Yes. The Gophers have to carry the standard for the Minnesota schools. Yeah, it's not like in 2021, where we had all five of the Division I teams at the time made the tournament, and every one of them won at least game, least one game, and three went to the Frozen Four.
So they have to play Omaha in the opening round. Omaha is the host of the regional. I would imagine both teams will travel pretty well for that. It's not super far for either school fan base. A few hours away, you know, 4 or 5 hours to get there to Sioux Falls. But if they get past that, you're looking at probably Boston University if the seeds hold. What do you think of the draw they got?
I think it's a reasonable draw. Kind of what I don't think it's like a region of death like we might see down in Maryland Heights, Missouri. I think it's a decent draw for them. Neither opponent that they would have, is going to be a pushover by any means. Nebraska, Omaha has played really well in the second half of the season. They're, I believe it's 12-3-1 since late January, and knocked off North Dakota in the NCHC Frozen face-off semifinals before falling to Denver in the title game. So they've had a really nice second half of the season. They're They're not good. They're a deep, balanced team, so they can they don't score a ton, but they when they do, it's usually pretty balanced. Then Boston U, you have a NHL basically prospect in Macklin Celebrini, one of the higher scoring forwards in the nation. Gophers played BU last year in the national semifinals, beat them 6-2. I think the teams are a little bit different this year, but for the Gophers, it's a regional. I could see them coming out of it, or I could see them not making it to St. Paul. It's they've been a team that's been at times tough to peg, but they've had a decent second half of the season. Little tempered by a loss to Michigan in the Big Ten tournament semifinals, but they had a week off, went up north to a resort for bonding and getting everything ready for the tournament. They're going for their third consecutive Frozen Four, so they're definitely tournament tested.
Yes, and you mentioned, different than last year's team. Some people, there's obviously the Gopher diehards who have been watching every game, and then there's people who kind of, are casuals who kind of pick it up this time of year who don't really follow it until like, oh, the tournament's here. I got to pay attention. For those folks, you referenced different this year than last year. Still a really good team, still a number two seed in their region. Still a successful year, and like we said, the Frozen Four is in St. Paul, so extra incentive. But if you're catching people up to speed, what is exactly different about this year's team versus last year's team that maybe got a little bit more year-long publicity?
Well, last year's team had a boatload of NHL talent on it. You've got like Brock Faber, who's basically right up there for the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year in the NHL. He ran that blue line very well. You also had two guys who've played in the NHL this year as rookies in Jackson Lacombe and Ryan Johnson. Then up front, you had two superstars, Hobie Baker Award finalists in Logan Cooley and Matthew Nyes, who are in the NHL this year too, and playing pretty well. And so you're missing that. What you have is you got a guy like Jimmy Snuggerud from that team last year. You have a guy like Rem Pitlick, who's the Gophers' leading scorer this year. They've received improving play throughout the year from a couple key freshman first-round picks and Sam Renzel on the blue line and Oliver Moore at center. And then their sophomore group from this year that were freshmen last year have stepped up. So it's a team that's deep. It has to win games a little bit differently than they did last year. They have to grind it out a little bit more at times. They might have to rely on Justin Close in net a little bit more, and he's been very good this year.
Justin Close, we get to this time of year, goaltending is so important, but would you say he's their most important player going into this regional? If they're going to get to St. Paul, it's not all on his shoulders, it's everybody, but if you're going to pick out one guy, if he has two really good games, that's more important than anybody else having two really good games, I would think.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I keep going back to the late great Doug Woog. He said they should have named the sport goalie instead of hockey.
Yes. I've heard Don Lucia say that before too. Maybe he got that from Doug, but it's true. I mean, this time of year, a goalie can steal a game. A goalie can keep a game at bay. It's a lot rides on that position, and they've been fortunate for a number of years to have very good goaltending. And you're right, Justin Close has been a key to two straight trips to the Frozen Four, and maybe a third now. What did you think of the rest of the 16-team bracket? I mean, we knew what the field was going to be. That's never a mystery, but sending North Dakota to Missouri, things like that. What do you think about all of that, how that all sorted itself out?
Yeah, that regional in Maryland Heights, Missouri, it's a suburban St. Louis. It's at a community ice rink that seats about 2,500. And I know they go by the committee goes by the pairwise, and you have rules not matching up interconference opponents in the first round, but what they've done there is sent the one fan base that is certain to travel to regionals on a moment's notice. Like, you find out Sunday where you're going, you might be playing Thursday. You got to book a flight or whatever. North Dakota people do that. We know that. But they're in a regional there. They play Michigan in the first round. Michigan has a nice big fan base too. You put those two fan bases in a 2,500 seat arena. I saw last night that there were tickets were going for about $800 to get into that.
$800 for a college hockey game, Randy? Is this
that's what they were asking on Ticketmaster. You know, nobody has to pay that if they don't want to go. But yeah, when you have a committee doing this, I think they should, you know, maybe exert a little bit more, be a little more aggressive than just going strictly by the pairwise and then some of the rules ahead. I know the coaches are the ones that set the rules for tournaments. I mean, I think you're going to see a bigger push to in the next round of regional assignments is to go to on-campus sites for the first round. So let's say like the top eight teams in the pairwise get home ice for that first round, and then they play the same thing for the quarterfinals the next week.
What else could they have done, and would that have affected the Gophers had they done something different with North Dakota?
Yeah, they you know, what they could have done. Well, it didn't. There's a rule that if you get five teams from one conference in, you can have a first round interconference matchup. The NCHC almost had five in. Colorado College got knocked out on the last day. They could have put North Dakota in Sioux Falls and played Nebraska Omaha, the host institution there. It's kind of an ironic thing because
if there would have been the five NCHC teams, but they can't now because there's four. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Back in 2018, North Dakota was the host of the Sioux Falls Regional. They, you know, they bid for it. They got, but the Fighting Hawks didn't make it to the regional. They didn't make the tournament that year. So, but this year, where they probably would have wanted to have bid on that one in hindsight, but didn't.
So, is this like, I'm trying to think of like a 2,500 seat arena now. Like Ritter is a nice arena, but that's probably comparable to that size. But
more than that,
like,
you know,
it's like Braemar. Is this like a?
This is the Braemar, or you know, it's something like that. Yeah, it's you know, there are bigger Minnesota high school section finals played, you know, than will be in this arena.
That's amazing. I mean, the atmosphere for those who can get in should be amazing. But yeah, that seems like a tough draw for North Dakota. I haven't read a whole lot about it, but I'm sure if I went on Facebook and saw my old high school friends, I'm sure they'd be chirping about this one pretty good.
Well, yeah, and then you know they have to play Michigan first, and then should they get past the Wolverines, you got the winner of Michigan State, the top seed in that region, just won the Big Ten tournament championship, and then Western Michigan, a foe that North Dakota knows very well from NCHC.
Yeah, it's that's a lot. That's a lot to deal with right there. That's a pretty big hurdle for them to climb. But you know, this time of year, there's 16 good teams, and like you said, Minnesota, the only Minnesota school in it. The Big Ten, well represented. They've done fine for themselves, right?
Yep. Four teams in. Yep.
So they got four teams. I mean, is there like a overwhelming favorite? I mean, and how do you, like you said, obviously you're the number two seed if you're the Gophers. You've got a chance no matter what. Where do you put their chances right now of getting to the Frozen Four?
Oh, you know, I would say, you know, 50-50-ish. I haven't broken down that much. You know, it's, yeah, they're going to have to play well. You know, string together two really good games. And they've done that quite a bit in the second half of the season here. Their last, you know, the one thing you worry about, their last two games out, they weren't at their best. They hung on to beat Penn State and to finish that quarterfinal series, but despite being outshot badly. And then they lost to Michigan 2-1 in the Big Ten semifinals. Michigan got off to a 2-0 lead, and it was a game where Michigan outplayed the Gophers. Gophers came back strong to get it to a one-goal game, but just couldn't get that equalizer at the end. I think, you know, you need to see them come out strong, have a stronger start than they have in the last two games.
Gophers play Thursday in Sioux Falls. That should be lots of fun. Then I'm assuming it's Thursday, Saturday, right?
Thursday, Saturday. So, yeah, 7:30 Thursday night. It's on ESPNU. And then the if they make the regional final, I believe that's a 5:30 also on ESPNU.
Should be fun. Randy, let's transition quickly to Gopher football. Been reading with interest, following along. You know, anytime there's a new quarterback, there's elevated intrigue. Just ask the Vikings. I think Vikings fans are energized, shall we say, right now about the prospects of Not Sam Darnold. I don't think they're excited about Sam Darnold. They're excited about the possibility of a new quarterback in the draft. No disrespect to Sam Darnold. I think people are kind of curious about him, but the drafting of a quarterback a month from now, people are interested in that. Gophers have their own new guy, Max Brosmer, transferred in from New Hampshire. Really looks and sounds the part so far, Randy. Like, you know, we saw the gaudy statistics. You saw some of the highlights. You're like, okay, this guy can definitely play. He seems like they like what they've got in him right now, and they're trying to kind of dial back some of the try to keep him kind of hidden away a little bit, or make sure that nobody falls in love with him too fast, because I think they really do like this kid.
Yeah, they're pretty high on him. I think it's for both what they've seen on the field and off it. Basically earlier in the week, you could say he won the press conference.
Yes,
I mean he comes off as a very focused, very intelligent quarterback, a guy who he knows what's important and why he's here and what he's already been voted captain of the team. You know, he's come in and earned the trust of his teammates. Those are good things. Now, it has to translate on the field. All we've seen is the one practice on Saturday, and it's, yeah, he looked good at times. There are other times where, pass or two here, got batted down in a situation, or he had one pick that I saw. But seems like he's got a live arm. It was also interesting watching the early enrollee freshman Drake Lindsey out of Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah.
He looked the part too. Big, tall kid. Had seemed to have a pretty strong arm and seemed to be have decent accuracy. Obviously, he's pretty much taking in like water through a fire hose. I mean, so much thrown at him at this time, and that's one thing that PJ Fleck was saying with Brosmer and obviously with the freshman too, is that he wants to put him in situations where they're being challenged. It's not going to be an easy situation right away.
Who is number two on the depth chart right now?
I would say Lindsey is.
Okay,
yep. He was taking second team reps on Saturday. Then with Mac Shikanjansky, Stillwater kid, who was a walk-on freshman last year.
You were saying they might have tried to add another kind of player, another quarterback in the portal. Is that still – I don't know where we're at with the windows right now, or is that still a possibility?
Yeah, with that portal window, I would not be surprised if they added another quarterback. They had a kid from Fresno State that they had, who had committed, that he got a better offer or whatever. He was probably going to be backup to Brosmer. So far, they haven't replaced him yet. So we'll see what happens as the portal comes open.
What else about this team stands out as we kind of think about spring practice? I mean, it's it feels like a big year. I mean, I know PJ got to address the UCLA stuff too. What did you think about how that all played out? What he had to say about that?
Yeah, he didn't take it head on per se. He said he loves Minnesota. Him and his wife love being here and want to stay here. It's there weren't a lot of specifics, but yeah, the big thing is he did stay. That would have been a timing would have been really tough had he left. But it is a very, very important season for him. Last year, you can't help but call it disappointing. I mean, when you finish the regular season at 5-7. Okay, they helped it out by winning a bowl game that they needed to win. But the season, the upcoming season, it's a challenging schedule. You look at it and you don't want too many 5-7 seasons on your resume, because then you don't stay long in a place.
Yeah, well, and you look at some of the early over under win totals. It's the people are saying, the over-unders are 4.5-5 wins right now. It's not like they're going to have to overachieve and surprise some people to kind of get back to where they want to be. But, on the same token, if you think about last year, how much do you think internally, and how much even as we evaluated, how much differently do you think last year plays out if Kalik Manis has the kind of year they expect him to have, or if they have someone more like Brosmer, this kind of experienced transfer portal you know, fifth year guy who can run the show the way they maybe want him to run it? How would last year have played out differently with different quarterbacking, I guess?
Yeah, I would think it would have played out a bit better in say the Northwestern and Illinois games. Obviously, defense had a lot to do with those losses, and you know, the health of linebacker is something I'm sure they don't want to go through that again. That was a tough situation all around. They lost Cody Lindenberg early, and he was kind of in and out of the lineup, and you know, and it just the injuries there just decimated that, along with guys who had left the previous spring through the portal. So it was that was a tough spot. But yeah, having better quarterback play, where you can, you know, extend some drives, you know, get a first down here or there, that would have made a difference. You flip a couple games and it doesn't look quite as bad.
Well, their season's still maybe 5 months away from really starting up, but Gopher hockey game in just a couple days. Randy Johnson will be there to cover it. He'll have all the reports for you, Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. I'm sure we'll talk again soon, Randy. Until then, safe travels, have fun in Sioux Falls, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Mike. Appreciate it.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Really good stuff from Randy. Like we said, follow his coverage from the regional in Sioux Falls. First game Thursday. Now, he said something that caught my ear, though, and I wanted to expand on it right now, talking about the tickets for that regional in Missouri with North Dakota and all the Michigan schools. I was like, that can't be right. I got to look this up. And he is absolutely right. Tickets on StubHub for standing room only, starting at $250. The most expensive tickets, and this is probably a pipe dream, you can ask whatever you want on these secondary markets. Doesn't mean someone's going to buy it. But like two tickets, like right behind the glass on the end where you can bang on it, you're probably going to get on TV, things like that. $5,719. $5,719 for the most expensive seats to this game. That is unbelievable. A few more going for, you know, $3,000 each, over $1,000 each for a few other ones. Now, most of them are more in the, you know, $200 to $600 or $700 range. That's just, you know, two tickets each. That's going to get you over $1,000 in most cases easily. What is Taylor Swift playing at the second intermission? Like, what is going on here? What is driving this up? Well, it's a tiny venue. It's going to hold about 3,100 people, according to Brad Schlossman from the Grand Forks Herald. Does a great job covering UND hockey for the Grand Forks Herald. Wrote a story about how this is like the smallest venue North Dakota has played in over 5 years. It's the practice rink for the St. Louis Blues. It looks nice. I mean, it's going to be a nice enough rink, but yeah, it's a tiny rink, and these are teams that average a lot of fans. I was looking that up. I was just kind of curious, like, you know, it's not just North Dakota that's probably driving this up, although that is, like Randy said, this is the team that travels the best. But North Dakota averaged 11,612 fans per game at their home games, easily led the nation in attendance. Michigan State was sixth, and they were over capacity. They averaged over 6,400 fans. Michigan was 10th. They averaged almost 6,000 fans. They were pretty much at capacity. Western Michigan, a little bit further down. They don't play at a very big arena, but they were, you know, 25th, and they, you know, they averaged 3,300 fans, 90% capacity. So these are all teams that have a good fan base, some of them the best fan bases in terms of overall total attendance. You're trying to cram all those diehards and anybody who just happens to be in the area and wants to watch college hockey into a 3,000-seat arena. That is going to drive up price, going to drive up demand. Maybe they should have played this at a bigger venue. I don't know. They do all this by the pairwise. They do all this by, you know, making sure that it's fair, making sure that the teams that are seated a certain way get sent a certain place. Just seems strange to me that you couldn't find a 6,000-seat arena at least for four teams that draw pretty well, three teams in particular, one team especially that led the nation in attendance, and now you're going to try to cram all these people in. It's good for the secondary market, not good for much of anybody else. Let's finish with the cooler. Two things I want to get to right now. One, the women's basketball tournament, NCAA tournament, should be taking center stage now. The first two rounds of this are usually kind of by the book, a lot of chalk. Some good games yesterday. Caitlin Clark in Iowa persevered. Not their greatest game, but they're through to the round of 16. Oh, by the way, Paige Beckers, the Hopkins star who was trending towards superstardom a few years ago before injuries slowed down her path. She had 32 points. UConn through to the Sweet 16. Gino Auriemma, legendary UConn coach, says, "We have the best player in America," talking about Paige Beckers, who is now healthy, playing at a really, really high level again. So this is setting the stage for what should be a wonderful, final two, final four rounds of the women's tournament. Lots of great teams left now. So we got to pay attention to that starting, later in the week next week, later in the week this week, as we get down finally to four. Just going to be a great tournament the rest of the way now that we've kind of sorted out, got the really good teams through. This is where I really think it'll be their time to shine. On a less positive note, the top two stories for a long time on ESPN's headline stack on Monday were about gambling, sports wagering. You remember my interview last week with Susan Sheridan Tucker from the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling. Just looking at these stories, the Shohei Ohtani story, of course, getting tons of publicity. Him talking Monday, the now Dodgers star talking about how the $4.5 million of gambling debt, he had no idea that it was even happening, blamed it all on his interpreter. I think there's still more chapters to be written in this story, but it is messy. It is not good. I've got questions. How do you not know $4.5 million is missing, first of all? But that's just me. I'm curious to see how this all plays out. But that was not the only story on the headlines or staying in the headlines. Toronto Raptors player Jontay Porter being investigated for gambling issues. There were some irregularities with a couple games that he came out of early. He only played a few minutes. The under was bet heavily on a lot of prop bets on this player twice, and it kind of raised some red flags. So Jontay Porter under investigation by the NBA. That story written by ESPN. So I don't imagine this is going to get better. It's only going to get more conflicted, only going to get more dangerous as we go further down this path, especially with prop betting, especially with, where players have individual influence over things like that. Yes, it's monitored. Yes, they're going to make, examples of certain people, things like that. But what's to stop this from happening on a massive level, especially at lower levels where there's not as much money, not as much incentive with the actual salaries of these players? So watch out for these stories. They keep popping up. This is not the first, and it is certainly not going to be the last. That will do it for me today. Like I said, lots of good stuff coming up the rest of the week. Expecting to be joined by Chris Hine for a Timberwolves show later this week. Ben Gessling for a Vikings breakdown from the owners' meetings. Have a Twins special edition preview show. That'll be in addition to the regular five shows this week. I'm going to do a Twins season preview show with Bobby Nightingale Jr. from the Star Tribune. That will go live probably Wednesday afternoon. Twins open on Thursday, but you can really probably listen to that anytime in the next week. It should have a lot of insights for the whole season, so check that one out once it goes live. Lots of stuff. It's the season of overlap. It's lots of good things coming up on this show and on your TV and in live venues. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great and safe rest of your Tuesday. Back at it again tomorrow.